This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Thursday, the 9th of May, 2024, and you are on the clock with Erin Green. I have a packed show today. We're talking marital rape and we're talking about the Bahamas' decision to recognize Palestine as a state. And we're having this discussion this morning with representatives from Equality Bahamas. Marital rape, the Strike Five campaign, and we're going to delve into, in the part of the conversation, we're going to look at statements and responses and comments from the Prime Minister of the Bahamas and actors in the Progressive Liberal Party, or better yet, the Davis administration in relation to marital rape. Before we get the show started, yesterday I had indicated that I had not seen any follow-up stories on the fire in Andrus. Before we start the marital rape and Palestine portion of this conversation, I just want to touch briefly on two articles. Bamsi suffers loss of 40% of livestock in recent Andrus fires. That's in Tuesday's Tribune. The president of Bamsi, Dr. Ravinia Roberts-Hanna, said Bamsi's loss of 40% of livestock pasture due to a fire last month did not greatly affect operations on the islands. The North Andrus campus lost 75% of its mangoes, 40% of livestock pastures, and 30 beehives were destroyed. This headline, though, obviously is a little misleading. And it should read 40% of livestock pastures destroyed and not 40% of livestock. Another quick story. Officials plea for fire trucks after weekend fire in Exuma, also in Tuesday's paper. After a fire erupted on Exuma last week, officials said the island desperately needs fire trucks. I mean, you should at least have fire trucks, a number of trucks that is commensurate with the pace of development or the level of development in Exuma. At the very least, hey, even if you're not going to do it because citizens live there, even if you're not going to do it because tourists live there, do it for economic reasons to ensure you can protect the investment that you have invited into the islands. Attention needs to be paid to all of these. Then there's the scrapyard blaze on Joe Farrington Road yesterday that burned for what appears to be over 12 hours. I'm not sure what the plan or the strategy was for that fire. I'm hoping I did not see but a picture. And we're going to get into that later. The story, Firefighters Battle Blaze on Joe Farrington Road, is in the Tribune. And looking for the story, I could tell you what page it's on in the Guardian. On page A7, there are more pictures. But it seems as if we're in the middle of a crisis. And before you tell me, but Ms. Green, fires happen and weather is natural phenomenon. I'm going to tell you that's not the crisis that I'm talking about. I'm talking about an administrative crisis where it seems that the government not only is unable to deploy resources where needed in an effective or efficient pace, I'm not sure the government understands its obligation to make these assessments to determine what resources should be available on hand in case of a natural disaster, an environmental event, wildfires. It's time to shift into proactive versus reactive mode. We're now talking Andrus. We know in Abaco over the last couple of days, a new fire, separate from the four fires that volunteer firemen were fighting, a new fire in Abaco. This is important. This is of national import. It's not what we're focusing on this morning, so I'm going to take this one caller, and then we're going to transition. Good morning, caller. Good morning.
Be quick here, but you got some people in there. Over quality Bahamas, I update for Israel. But I support, I don't know why Mr. Mitchell, I don't want to let Israel know he's speaking for me. I support Israel because Israel is God-fearing land. If Mr. Mitchell read his Bible, even though if you're blessed, Abraham, the nation will be blessed. Because Abraham, the nation will be blessed. So I hope the reverence in Parliament and to go with Mother Cynthia Price. You remember Mother Cynthia Price welcomed Israel and she put the Ten Commandments inside the Supreme Court. So we support Israel. We don't support Mr. Mitchell's claim, and he's not speaking for me. Secondly, I believe fire truck, if you're going to send ambulance with the fire truck, that don't make no sense. We should have purchased a fire truck and the ambulance at the same time because what happened, you see what's happening now, you mentioned the fire, you know? No fire truck. The ambulance are there, but where's the fire truck? And if you can't send fire truck, send pumping machine. I speak about this before. Like a pumping truck with water, and you could out the fire. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
And you make those seven, the fire get out of hand, you put the fire truck on a boat, and you send it to Andrews, you send it to this place. We are moving to, if you're moving to the 21st century, then let us move. Don't tell the people we're moving, but we don't see it.
Thank you.
And Fred Mitchell, I support Israel. Speak for yourself. Have a good day.
Good day. I wonder how many hardware stores remained open last night to allow residents in areas close to the fire to purchase things like hoses and buckets so that they could protect their property in case of a drastic wind shift or if the fire went out of control. Dear caller, I'm transitioning to another portion of the show. I'm just responding to what Pumpkin Eater had said, and I'm going to read a brief portion of a letter from the Caribbean Feminist Statement Against Israel's Settler Colonial Project, an ongoing genocide in Palestine. More than 35,000 Palestinian people have been killed since October 7, 2023. Most of them are women and children. More than 80,000 Palestinian people have been injured. Over 8,000 Palestinian people are missing. Almost 2 million Palestinians are currently displaced in Gaza, and 1.1 million are facing catastrophic food insecurity. Good morning, caller.
How are you doing?
I am good. Thank you, caller.
Good, good. On your previous discussion on response times.
Yes, sir.
I think, you know, we wouldn't have this problem if all those things were under contract.
That's what you think? I see, because I'm sitting in this place where I see the value of the position that taking these services out of the hands of government, a monolith.
Aaron, no. I'm trying to be facetious.
Okay, good stuff, because I was about to step in it and tell you I am equally concerned about the lack of enforcement and the lack of a regulatory framework to govern private sector or subcontractors and contracted services to the government.
The problem that we face, right, is that it seems that you need a contract or to issue a contract or issue a contract to do anything, even the services that are supposed to be fundamental and in place and not requiring a contract. You see, because I think, you know, if something has to be done, generally speaking, seems that we need to have some kind of handout involved to a particular person who is in the party or connected to the party.
Right.
You know, and that should not be.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Okay, babe.
Absolutely. And I appreciate your satire. Absolutely. There are services that are so essential, they must not be left in the hands of foreigners or third parties or subcontractors. They're just that essential. We have to transition. I wonder if anyone at Guardian Radio will say anything about the worldwide recall of AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccines after it was revealed in court that 80 people had died directly related to the vaccines. I can be honest with you, I saw the headlines yesterday. I didn't have time to delve into it, to do the type of research warranted to have that discussion on the public airwaves. But I have been reaching out to a group called the Optimist Group, a group of local doctors who I want to bring into the conversation because they are doctors. They're far more informed than I am. I can't seem to get them on the air. Oh, don't worry. I see the Prime Minister not asking any questions. I think he's creating. Anyway, God ain't tell no Israel soldier to rape Palestinian women. I'm going to read that text later in the show. Aaron, when y'all discussing the scrap metal yard disaster, because I'm furious. Well, I have a show lined up today. Maybe I'll have time, more time to get into it, but maybe I won't. Good morning, caller. I'm getting ready to transition to another segment of the show. How are you?
Good morning. Just like to opine very quickly here concerning the fire yesterday.
Yes, sir.
Okay. As you know, for quite some time, we have residences in some of these locations where we have these commercial types of businesses that currently occupy premises near their residences and in the local area. I know there have been calls in the past to have these premises removed out of these residential areas and relocated to some type of commercial property or some
commercial zone
where they could operate from. I know the, and I don't want to really call any properties names, but I know for a fact there's one up on Soldier Road that persons have been calling for the removal of that property for quite some time. You see, the politics in the the politics in this country, you know, sometimes you try not to dabble into it, but it stares you straight in the face. Why are these entities still in these residential areas when the government can make
a decree?
You know,
they could decree, they could describe any part of the land as anything. They could acquire the land. They could, right? They could do anything within the scope of the law. Here's my question to you, Jeff. I remember that one on Soldier Road. My daddy used to go there all the time.
Yep.
My family friends. The gentleman is passed now. I'm sure.
Yes, but it's still operate, yeah.
Right. When we used to go there, that was the outback. That was the bush. That was an industrial zone. So here's my question. At the same time, because what you've laid on the table is sensible. I'm not saying that it's not sensible. Here's my question. When did those zones become residential zones? Why were people allowed to invest that amount of money into properties around a zone that we know, even if they had stopped the operation immediately, right? Even if they had stopped, say they stopped it in 1995, because my dad been passed from 89, right? Let's say they stop it in 1995. Those people living in that area would still have to deal with the environmental
impact from that business.
Of the business on the land that they're living on. And so a second question to put on the table is, why was that area then rezoned to part residential, part commercial, right? Why wasn't that whole area defined as an industrial zone?
Mm-hmm.
And it just speaks to what I will continue to call an administrative crisis.
Yep.
Right? And when we look in terms of land management and housing and ensuring that you have sufficient and proper housing inventories for future generations, it's a crisis at the administrative level.
Well, to answer your question quite succinctly, back in the day, yes, there were, because even if you look at the industrial park, which is where Backpack and everything is, that area was actually considered a commercial area.
Mm-hmm.
But now where you have residents now have permeated that area, I would have thought by now that successive governments would have at least reallocated them to a different location, perhaps give them a 2 or 3 or 4 acres of land to remove that entity from there, probably carry them out to a Gladstone Road or carry them out to around the Airport Industrial Park or something like that, but remove that entity from there and continue the residential side of that area. Thus, the issue that we saw yesterday will become null and void. But the second thing, too, while I'm on this wicket and while it comes to mind, is that even if the government reclaims that land, remove that entity from there, I'm now focused at what we see yesterday, that the landfill is so saturated with all kind of toxins and oils and gasoline and everything under there. I even wonder whether it makes any sense even to acquire that land for residential purposes. I mean, what else could we use the land for if the government was to give them the subsidies to move their business from there and go elsewhere? But there's so many things, Aaron, in closing, mm-hmm. that I believe that, we could have remedied for quite some time, especially when we have situations, even though not frequent, but they pop up from time to time to show that there is the danger of these things happening again. Why is it that we as a government have not made the allocations to move these entities from these areas, rezone them into a commercial or industrial part of the island so they could continue their business? I mean, it's just as if, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We just got to strengthen the wheel and start to get the wheel turning again.
Absolutely.
In another direction. But thanks for taking my call, Aaron. I just wanted to put that on the table for us to consider, because I could already see, I live close to that area, and I'm telling you, the residents in that area right now, many of them are up in arms because of the danger. And the smoke inhalation is one thing. You have persons who have asthma and health issues, and they have to breathe those toxins from that fire, which is still raging up to last night. The fire was still up some 20 feet in the air.
Yes,
so,
sir.
You see how things go. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. And, I want to say to my guests, we're bringing them in a moment, thank you for your patience. This fire is a big deal. The conversation surrounding it is broader than this one fire, as we could see, Andrus and the destruction of Bamsey Resources, Abaco, multiple fires concern about arson, and then another fire. We have Exuma. It's unbelievable that there's not sufficient of this particular resource given the pace of development going on in Exuma and now New Providence. It's an important conversation. And then let's couple it with this, and then we're making this transition. I saw the notice yesterday evening that water and sewerages services were restricted or diminished yesterday because of a system-wide failure. Many residents across New Providence were without running water for a significant time. Now imagine, here I am talking to my friend online, saying to him, buddy, I see the fire approaching the back boundary of your property. You call me. I say, you have a hose. It's time to go out and wet your roof. It's time to go out and wet your roof. It's time for your neighbors to start a battalion, right? And everybody get their hose, face the back boundary where the fire would approach from, and wet that down. Spend a couple of hours just wetting that down. Imagine now that residents may or may not have been without water supply in the face of this fire. And see, I'm going to stick a pin right after this. Hopefully we realize that accidents don't just happen. Tragedies don't just happen. They're an amalgamation of incidences and sometimes omissions of acts. All of these different parts of the system must be up and running and working just in case somebody needs them. This attitude of we don't have to think about that until we have to think about that is destroying our nation and destroying the future of Bahamians. We're going to stick a pin right there, texters. It's been a rough night. It's been a rough night for many, many Bahamians. Joining me in this part of the discussion is Miss Alicia Wallace from Equality Bahamas. Good morning, Alicia.
Good morning, Aaron.
Thank you for your patience. Thank you for your patience very, very much. So I've invited Equality Bahamas on air after I saw the Strike 5 campaign's newest, release of media. And I was really excited to talk about that because over the last few weeks, if I could read just some of the headlines starting from April 12th, PM Davis says, rape is rape. April 13th, PM, why do you want to describe rape? 17th of April, activists called for stiffer penalties for convicted rapists. 18th of April, Crisis Center presses for action on marital rape bill. The 23rd of April, U.S. says Bahamas not equal for women. On the 23rd of April, report raises concern over marital rape, inadequate protections for LGBTQI. Another article, PM suggests marital rape won't happen under his administration, 23rd of April. 23rd of April again, PM says divorce is a solution for marital rape. 24th of April, PM's comments on marital rape unacceptable, activist says. 25th of April, FNM say PM flip-flops over marital rape. So when I saw the new campaign from Equality Bahamas, Strike 5, and their newest project, I wanted to put them all together to talk about them. So give us a sense of what we're going to be talking about today, more specifically.
We have been running this Strike 5 campaign to criminalize marital rape for a number of years now. We relaunched in 2018, and this year we've done a bit of a rebrand to show the urgency of this issue, mm-hmm. as it really has not progressed very far from when we were talking about it in 2018. We do have a different draft, which is great. It's a vast improvement on the 2018 one, but we haven't gotten anywhere since that draft in 2022. It looked like this administration was going to move it forward, and then it pulled a number of stunts on us. The first one was shifting the conversation to the gender-based violence bill, which seemed to be a push to get that passed before going to the Human Rights Council, before participating in the Universal Periodic Review, and then switching that bill out for what I consistently call a piece of garbage, which is the Protection Against Violence Act that they passed that really does not address the issue of gender-based violence in particular, and that the Prime Minister keeps pointing to every time we talk about marital rape, every time we talk about rape, saying that this quote-unquote protection against violence bill covers it. So during the month of April, when he kept making all of these very bizarre statements about marital rape, about sexual violence that are quite misleading, mm-hmm. we were quite concerned that the public, hearing from a person who it perceives to be knowledgeable about the issue, knowledgeable about the law, and who the public might expect to be honest, it was a concern that people would just take what he said at face value. So we thought it was important to point out that what he was saying was not correct, that the Blueprint for Change, first of all, cannot be the only thing that you address in your five-year term. Other issues are going to come up. Other issues have existed and have demanded attention. But we wanted to point out what is in the Blueprint for Change and what gender equality and the Sustainable Development Goals, in particular, Goal 5 on gender equality, really mean, mm-hmm. and how that translates to a commitment to criminalize marital rape. If this administration, as it said in the Blueprint for Change, wants to achieve gender equality, which includes eliminating discrimination against women and eliminating violence against women. So that's what that new document, that new series of graphics was about, bringing some clarity mm-hmm. and pointing out the inaccuracies in what the Prime Minister said about the Blueprint for Change and how it relates to this issue of marital rape.
Well, let's start with the first image and the first quote from the Prime Minister. Quote, I am guided by my Blueprint for Change. That sets out the basis for which I asked people to vote for me, and marital rape was not contained in that. Close quotes, a quote from the Prime Minister, Philip Davis. And then Equality Bahamas points out in the flyer, this administration didn't realize its Blueprint for Change, through its reference to the Sustainable Development Goals, is committed to criminalizing marital rape. And so if you could explain that again.
Absolutely. So there's this reference to the Blueprint for Change. So we went to the Blueprint for Change to see, okay, well, what is in it? If you're saying that criminalizing marital rape isn't there, then what does it commit to? And on page 49, under the section labeled reform, it says, quote, the PLP is committed to the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals that ensure quality education, lifelong learning opportunities, gender equality and empowerment for women and girls, quality water, sanitation, and access to affordable, reliable, sustainable, and modern energy, end quote. Mm-hmm. So the Sustainable Development Goals were adopted by the UN General Assembly in 2015, and the aim is to reach these goals by 2030. We're not on track for that at all. But the PLP and its Blueprint for Change made a commitment to the SDGs, not only made the commitment, but singled out four or five of the goals. And one of them is gender equality and empowerment for women and girls. So that just looks like something very general. But it's important to look at the Sustainable Development Goals themselves, which have targets and indicators. Mm-hmm. So to achieve gender equality and the empowerment of women and girls, these are the things that we need to do. Mm-hmm. Those are the targets. And these are our measurement tools, indicators. How do we know that we are reaching them or not reaching them? Okay. And the first two targets under Goal 5 for achieving gender equality and empowering women and girls are ending all forms of discrimination against all women and girls everywhere. Mm-hmm. And eliminating all forms of violence against all women and girls in the public and private spheres, including trafficking and sexual and other types of exploitation.
Okay.
So both of these are connected to the issue of marital rape. One speaks to discrimination against all women and girls everywhere. So the operative word there is all, mm-hmm. meaning that we are including women who are married and not married. How are we discriminating against women? Yes. We're doing that in the Sexual Offenses Act in Section 3 that excludes married people from the definition of rape.
Okay. Let's go to the next flyer on page 3.
Page 3 has another quote from the Blueprint for Change. This one is from page 51, where it highlights the four pillars of the National Development Plan, that Vision 2040 from a few years ago.
Yes.
And it says, quote, the Progressive Liberal Party is committed to eliminating all forms of discrimination against men and women in the Bahamas, end quote.
Mm-hmm.
It's self-explanatory. It's committed to eliminating all forms of discrimination. That means changing laws that discriminate on the basis of sex and gender. And we have already started this process through the engagement of UN Women, where consultants were brought to do a complete review of all of the laws of the Bahamas and to indicate which laws are discriminatory and how. And the discriminatory law review, many people will remember, was held in 2022,
mm-hmm.
where we looked at all of the different laws, looking at laws on education, laws on sexual violence, on health, and finding where the law needs to be amended to ensure that there is no discrimination against women or men. And that report, we saw a draft report, but the final report has not yet been made available, and there have been no updates on it since then.
Okay. All right, so you want to read through some more of the images in this campaign?
Well, some of them I've gotten to already because
Absolutely.
They're highlighting the goals
right.
and the targets, which are really the crux of our argument against what the Prime Minister said, and really highlighting that this is a commitment that was made in the Blueprint for Change. And we highlight that the Sexual Offenses Act is, in fact, discriminatory.
Mm-hmm.
And that was highlighted in that discriminatory law review that was undertaken by the consultants under UN Women.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a sex and gender-based discrimination that is combined with other factors like marital status. And this kind of discrimination limits women's access to our human rights. So again, we know that our rights are inherent. We don't need to do anything to earn them or to deserve them. The issue that we have is in accessing those rights. And there are laws and policies in this country, like in many other countries, that impede our access.
Okay, so to those people who are saying that, like the Prime Minister, who is quoted as saying, I want to read the quote properly, I'm pulling it up right now. The one where he say, y'all ruling us, man.
Yeah.
I can't believe I don't have that in front of me, but the comment the Prime Minister made, the whole article, what more do y'all want? Y'all ruling.
Right. He went on to say that women are in the public service and things like that, which is a common argument. We hear it all the time. It's not new. It's very lazy. It's very old. And it is a distraction.
Mm-hmm.
We're saying that we're having this issue over here. We're talking about sexual violence. We are talking about marital rape. We're talking about inequality. We're talking about the increase in actual and reported gender-based violence, including domestic violence and intimate partner violence. And here comes the Prime Minister saying, but look over here, y'all have all these jobs.
Right. We have all these jobs, but can women experiencing extremely difficult periods get, menstrual cycles? Is that part of a woman's life taken into consideration in the workplace in terms of time off if a woman does have an extremely intense menstrual cycle or is experiencing medical issues, right?
In that situation, you're entirely depending on, the quote-unquote kindness of your employer.
Mm-hmm. Just
to give you time off or to offer any kind of flexibility.
Right.
We're actually in the midst of research right now on maternity leave
mm-hmm.
and the postpartum experiences of women. And in the focus groups and in the solution sessions that we've held, it's really become obvious that laws are insufficient, and it means that we have to depend on people, on whoever's in human resources to, Bahamas will say, give me a bligh, right? Give mm-hmm. me a little pass. You have your 13 weeks of maternity leave, but what happens if you have a high-risk pregnancy and you have to be on bed rest from month 5.
Right.
What does that mean for your maternity leave? What is supposed to happen after you give birth? We're saying that it's recommended for those who are able to breastfeed for at least 6 months. How are you supposed to do that if you're returning to work after 3 months or even sooner because you had to begin your leave a little bit earlier. There's no other kind of leave for illness that's related to pregnancy. So there are a lot of inequalities here. Men don't have to deal with these issues. Women have to deal with them.
Yes. And the point you made, I want to get back to a point you made earlier about having laws in and of itself is not the solution, or is not the final destination. But I want to go to this caller right now. Good morning, caller. You're on the clock. We're talking about the Prime Minister's response to campaigns calling for the criminalization of marital rape.
Ms. Green, you know, I'm sorry for calling, okay? And, you know, your guest, I can't disagree with anything she's saying because I came from a mother. And so it seems to me men are very, very angry with women, right? Even from the church. I don't know if the church, the papacy is responsible for this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But your guest is very, very informed and a very human, painting a human picture of mothering, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the criminalization of marital rape will be very, very hard to prove, and really, to me, it's a waste of time in the conversation because I can't have sex with somebody who doesn't want it. It doesn't pan out for me. I'm sorry, okay? But what I want to make a little joke here to wake up everybody. According to the intellectuals' narrative of rape is rape, but I hope the Dar Burrows would come on. I'd like to hear from her again because we saw where a young man was raped and his mother is a police. So if rape is rape, why hasn't we? I'm concerned about young men also, because I have a son, and I'll go, they'll say, oh God, I might even live in it. Listen to me, man. Whoever named Paul with raping my son, hey, and everything cool. Listen to me. Mm-hmm. A young man was raped, and I didn't hear a tape.
But listen,
what I'm saying is, what kind of world are we living in?
52, this is the first time I'm hearing about it as well.
But I agree with you. It was on the WhatsApp, and it was on Lincoln Bay Show, so that means it doesn't exist, because the person is a status quo. I even call, I can't even describe them. I mean, what's going on in this country, man? What are we?
Man, okay, so watch this, 52. Watch this, right? I don't watch the shows of people who's... Anyway, I find it difficult because of my personal experience of being attacked to have to absorb media from people who have attacked me. But you could have sent me the clip. You could have sent...
I sent you some of it. But Aaron Green, man, I can finish listening to you again. But I'm just saying, I don't want it to be a one-way paradigm. You know, but, the thing is, marital rape and rape, people really trying to juxtapose this with people not being, not getting married. But sensible people, it really shouldn't pan out. Because if you want to get married and you love someone, that overrides everything. And they say love conquers all things. Sometimes we can just use aphoristic sayings to eliminate BS. Give thanks, man. What, you don't hear nothing from the police? Nothing. The guy just got raped. The woman on the rape, on Lincoln being crying, saying her son got raped, and nothing happens. It's a pathetic nation.
But 52, why you didn't send me that information the way you sent me the copy of the book that I read out loud on Uncle's show? I don't have a problem talking about these things. Just give me 1 second, producer, before we go. Just 1 second before we go to the break. This is another critique that I have of Mr. Davis's contributions to this discussion. Mr. Davis continually speaks in a way that narrows marital rape down to only being to a point where only women are victims of marital rape. Right? His commentary is problematic. If women, do I say, I don't like the idea of it, the part where he talks about divorce, right? And he continually says, women should, right? Women should. Marital rape can be experienced by men also. Men can be victims of rape also. And I think the Prime Minister's comments are reckless because it creates a state in the public consciousness, right? It creates a public consciousness that refuses to believe that men can be victims of rape, and thus this campaign to criminalize marital rape must be an agenda of women only. But it is 2024. Let me repeat the date for you all. It is Thursday, the 9th of May, 2024, and I have come here to tell you today that men are victims of rape also. Okay? And when the law says that penetration by an object amounts to rape, men can be raped also. men also can have physiological responses, which means their body responds, right? And that response may be incongruous with what they're thinking and feeling. So a young man who is being molested by an older cousin or family friend who is uncomfortable with the harassment may have a physiological response where he becomes erect. But he is not pleased, he's not happy, he's not comfortable, he's not actually aroused in the romantic sense. Men are also victims of rape, and men are also victims of marital rape, whether it's criminalized or not. Alicia?
Yes, I'm here. I completely agree. Yeah.
Sorry about that. And I want to emphasize, I appreciate what 52 was saying. It's outrageous. Claims that a young man has been raped. It's not in the mainstream media. I don't hear the police talking about it, right? But who is responsible for the environment in which that happens? That is the question. And I'm saying that I think the prime minister and state actors who also perpetuate this language are partially responsible as well.
Most definitely contributing to victim blaming, to very harmful ideas about, harmful and narrow ideas about masculinity and what it is, all contribute to ideas that people have about sexual violence and who can be a victim or a survivor of sexual violence and what the response should be of the person, but also of the systems that are supposed to support us, but really only support some of us, very few of us, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Alicia, I've got a lot of text here that I want to read. I'm going to take this call first. Yeah, I'm going to take this call, and then we get back into the text and the discussion. Good morning, caller.
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. This is me. I got a question for the group. Not a question, but I want the group to also lobby, like myself and y'all, we lobby in for equal pay for women. And so far, I hear no woman groups asking for that, because it's sad that some women do construction and they're on the job, private sector in government, but they don't get equal pay. They deserve it.
Thank you, Pumpkin Eater.
So I want them to comment on that. I wonder how they're going to do that. Because the Pumpkin Eater want equal pay for female and male guy, but for female. Have a good day.
Absolutely.
That's a great point. We do talk about equal pay for work of equal value. We don't have a campaign the way that we do for criminalizing marital rape, and perhaps that's something for us to look at going forward. But this is an issue that we regularly raise, and we have raised it since these comments by the Prime Minister pointing to women being in the public sector, women having all of these jobs, and the general commentary that, you know, women further their education and are getting more degrees than men. And we point out that this does not necessarily translate in the workplace, because there are ideas about who should be a manager, who should have executive positions, who is fit to be a leader. And there's a difference in pay, which we've seen in successive reports. Every year there's a report that comes out from different bodies that note that our gender pay gap is in the area of 30%. So this is definitely an area that needs more attention, more focus.
Absolutely. Alicia, let me just read this text. Give me a second. The fact that a child was raped, given a deadly STD, I'm not going to read the other part of your text, and the mother is a police officer crying out for justice, and you say you are fighting for victims but will not talk about this serious situation, makes me look at you sideways. I feel like it's disingenuous, just like the PM, there's no difference. Dear texter, I can understand that you are extremely frustrated living in this state and feeling like that you have no recourse. You don't have access to the tools necessary to protect young people from sexual violence. I can appreciate exactly how frustrated you are. Please don't direct that frustration at me, Texter. As I said, I am just becoming aware of this matter. I hold a place on the radio. There are rules to be followed. Do you want me to disrespect the media and the Bahamian public like the Prime Minister did in his last commentary about the media and how they're so pesky, like, you know, these meddling kids? That's what you want me to do? Let me take this job seriously, Texter, right? Like I said to 52, he had the information and he didn't share it with me. You want me to just run off on air about something as serious as this? Do you all understand your responsibility to ensure that justice is not perverted by reckless or emotional outbursts and contributions in the public domain? For the interest of the victim of this alleged crime, and I'm going to say alleged because that's what we have to say, for the purpose of protecting justice, let me treat the matter as serious as it is, Texter, and stop muddying the water with these reckless statements. I mean, you, Texter, I want the audience to know that what they put in the text, I can't even read out loud. But you want me to talk about it. Come on, let's be responsible participants in this process called governance. All right, Alicia, here, let's pause from that. Let's go to a caller, and then I'm going to get back to another text. Good morning, caller.
Morning, Aaron Green, and morning to you guys.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
You know, mm-hmm. I don't know why we keep beating this marital rape horse. And all the people who are always jumping on this situation, they're supposed to be intelligent people because everything is right there. That's the reason. And they wonder why the Prime Minister making himself look shame, saying this and this one and that one and the next one. Listen, there is a process. When you go to get married, you got to get your license from the state. That's your state taxes. After which, you go to the church and you do your covenant between you and whoever. Now, if for some reason or another the relationship becomes toxic, you have to just replace that process. Now, all the people who are advocating for this marital meeting want to jump or circumvent that process. The law, nobody quotes the Sexual Offenses Act, Article 15, A through E, which speaks directly to the marriage, a toxic marriage. But everybody saying marital rape, but I never hear nobody read that on the over the airwaves.
Read it for me.
Read it. Well, I can't read it.
Okay, then. See, but why y'all do that? Why y'all come in and come to chastise somebody for not reading something, but you not prepared to present it to the public either?
Yeah, but you got to understand my position. I legally blind, but I know what the section, that's why I put it over the air. So someone like a 52
repeat this.
Could go, and you and your guests who could see, could go read it.
Repeat the section so I could Google it while I on the air talking to my guests.
It is the
I can tell you now what section 15 is because about it, and we talk about it regularly, and it's a part of the Strike 5 campaign that we actually call for section 15 to be repealed. Because it will no longer be necessary once Section 3 is amended to ensure that rape is rape, and we remove that marital exception. Section 15 does not cover all marriages. I'm responding to your question. You could just give me a moment. Section 15 only speaks to marriage or married people in the case where there is a divorce, a decree of judicial separation, a separation agreement, or an order of the court. So where that doesn't exist, married people do not have protection from rape. Section 15 is a special category. It's even called sexual assault by spouse. It's not even called rape. That's not good enough. And to your point about divorce is a wonderful thing. We welcome people to divorce.
If they feel they're in a toxic relationship, that's your right.
To get a divorce, it's very difficult.
Here in
and it's expensive. And divorce is that's civil law, and we're talking about a crime of sexual violence.
Okay.
So
there should be two areas of recourse.
Pause. Ms. Wallace, pause for a second.
You and your guests have a lot of time to speak. I don't. All it is a name change if you look at it, because even if we call it rape, I'll be the devil's advocate. Even if we call it rape in marriage, like I say, You're trying to circumvent. You're one of the police come in the house because you holler rape and pick up the man and lock him up. It ain't going to go like that because you're married. See, you got to take it.
Okay, so hold on. Call her. I give you some time, right? I want you to notice that I didn't drop the call after you made your comment. I give you space to be able to respond to what is being said, right? Don't create a framework like you being pushed out of the conversation. But I don't understand what it is that y'all are saying. If I believe that I have been raped, right? If I believe that I've experienced sexual violence and somebody has forced me to have sex with them against my will, you telling me that my recourse is to go back into the law and follow the process of how I got to that point?
Yeah, that's exactly what you have to do.
No, sir. No, sir.
You have to avoid that process.
My good caller friend, now I'm going to cut you, okay?
You ain't going to cut me because we make it. You got your say and I got my say.
Yeah.
I'm quoting from the law.
Pause. You're quoting from a set of words, right?
Law.
You're quoting from a set of words.
No, ma'am. I'm quoting from the sexual offenses.
The word, okay.
Law.
Now I can cut you. Now I got to cut you calling my friend, my good friend. Now I had to call you. Because is not the law made up of words? Don't play semantics here. We're talking about violence and people's lives. That's what we're talking about. We're talking about violence and people's lives. The law is made up of words. Those words can be changed at any time. That's why you can amend laws. The presumption then is, inherently, these words can be changed at any time. This law is not permanent. Those laws are words. And what I want to know is, do people think that words are more important than other people's lives? Now, callers, it's 11:03. I see you on the line. We have to go to the break, end on the clock, and we're going to pick up this conversation on the other side of the hour in the Guardian Radio AM hour. Ms. Wallace is going to stay with us until 11:30. And then I have another set of guests coming in, and we're having an entirely different conversation when those guests come in at 11:30. So callers, I see y'all drop the call. Call right back after the break. I just want y'all to know, I have some very basic rules. Human life is more important than words. Human life is more important than laws. Unless those laws are about protecting human life. Thank you for joining me in this conversation. It's not over, so please stay tuned. Caller, you could call back. Please call back. You could call back, of course. Or you could message me on my private line and round me there. I don't mind. But let's get this one thing straight. Human life is more important than words. You've been on the clock with Aaron Green. Stay tuned. Guardian Radio AM is about to start.